Our episodes contain graphic information and at times strong language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Would you like some murder with your coffee?
Welcome to Morning Murders. I'm Nicole.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Brian. We're just three gals sitting around drinking coffee and talking about true crime.
True crime?
Sometimes we talk about terrible things, so all you gotta do sometimes is just talk about it in a stupid voice.
Stupid voice.
Because reality doesn't stop, so sometimes you just gotta make fun of it or laugh or else you lose your mind. Am I right, Beans?
Yeah. We're so excited to be back for this third season. This is amazing and so awesome that we've made it this far. Like, to be able to be consistent, I think, is, like, amazing.
I think it's a habit now, right? We've done it for more than 30 days.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
I love that.
Podcasting is officially a habit.
Guess what? You know what? If I had to make a new habit, I'm glad I get to make it with you guys.
Aww.
Gross.
That was cute. Oh.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Beans, for all of your support. We just love hearing from all of you. You're just the sweetest beans.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think today is a day, an Amanda day.
It's an Amanda day. And this one comes from a bean that is related to me by blood. This is from my big sister, Carly.
Carly!
Have any of you heard of Charles Starkweather and Carol Fugate?
No, but I've heard of Carly.
Carly!
Carly!
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod.
Fam of the pod.
There it is.
Fam of the pod.
Aw. Link stickers for her. I do want to give a trigger warning for violence against children and animals. Mm-hmm. If this was a movie, it would be on that site, Does the Dog Die? So if that's not something you can handle today, sorry, Nicole, sorry, Brenna, you're already in it.
Oh,
that's absolutely okay. Go take care of yourself. You want to come back? This episode will always be here. Forever. It will always be here. So Charles,
you've been warned. Oh, sorry.
get
all right, back. Just, yeah.
It's been fun, guys. Charles Starkweather was born November 24th, 1938, to Guy and Helen Starkweather. He was the third of eight children. There were seven boys and one girl. His father was a carpenter, but unfortunately suffered from rheumatoid arthritis and wasn't able to uphold a job in his field for long periods of time. His mother worked as a waitress to help supplement the family income. From the outside, one might call this family poor, and maybe they didn't have a lot of fancy material things, but they had warm beds and a roof, and no one went hungry. Charles actually recalls having a pretty nice and normal childhood. He didn't really notice that they were different from other families until he started school.
Oh, no. I'm already worried.
Charles would later say that the first day of school is where his disdain for the human race began. Little Charles had red hair, bow legs, and a stutter, and was teased relentlessly for it by the other children. He also had severe myopia, which is just a fancy way of saying he was incredibly nearsighted. He needed glasses desperately, but refused to wear them because those were for nerds. Their name for him was Red-Headed Bow-Legged Peckerwood. Yeah, it was old-timeys. He hated school, except for gym class. He got pretty strong, and soon it got to a point where he had enough and actually started to beat up on the kids bigger than him to scare off potential threats. Very jailhouse mentality for a little kid. One day, he saw James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause and became absolutely obsessed with the entire look and persona. And I mean obsessed. If he could have gotten into his skin and just crawled in and lived there, he would have. That would have been ideal. He did have one good friend, Robert Bob Van Bush, who was considered to be a bad boy. He said about Charles, quote, "He could be the kindest person you've ever seen. He'd do anything for you if he liked you. He was a hell of a lot of fun to be around, too. Everything was just one big joke to him. But he had this other side. He could be mean as hell, cruel. If he saw some poor guy on the street who was bigger than he was, better looking or better dressed, he'd try to take the poor bastard down to his size." Charles dropped out of high school, and a few years later, he started work as a garbage man. This is where he met the love of his life, 13-year-old Carol Fugate. At the time, he was 18, and Carol was 13.
Yeah. Hmm.
So okay. So they have a typical relationship for the 50s, where it's a bad boy who attracts the girl, and her parents hate him. Charles's parents weren't super fond of Carol either. I guess at one point, Charles used his father's car to try and teach Carol how to drive, and she crashed it.
Ah.
So cut to December 1st, 1957. Charles goes to a local convenience store, apparently to buy a stuffed animal for Carol, but didn't have enough money. When the manager, 21-year-old Robert Colbert, refused to let Charles buy it on credit, he stormed out of the store in a huff. He returned to the store hours later, three times. Once to buy cigarettes, once to buy gum. Obviously, he was, like, gathering the nerve and casing the place. The third time, he came in with a shotgun, pointing it at Robert's face, and forced him to open the safe. He then shoved Robert into his own car and made him drive to a remote location.
Oh, no.
Charles pulled Robert from the car and shot him. He left behind a pregnant wife. Charles told Carol about the robbery, but failed to mention the murder. He threw the murder weapon in the river and altered the look of his car. He actually wasn't even a suspect of Robert's murder until a while later. So just 2 months after Robert's murder, on January 21st, 1958, Charles rings the bell at the Bartlett home looking for Carol. It's important to note later that they didn't share the same last name. Her parents are Bartlett and she is Fugate.
Oh, why?
Because that's her stepdad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
You'll see why later.
Okay.
Her parents deny him entry and tell him something along the lines of, like, they don't want to see him, or, you know, don't come around my daughter anymore. This infuriates you like that?
Don't come around my daughter no more.
It was like he was here.
Wow.
Sorry. That just took over me.
Took over your body.
Oh, my God. This infuriates Charles, who first shoots Carol's stepfather, Marion Bartlett, in the head. When his wife, Velda Bartlett, starts screaming, Charles shoots her and then stabs her in the throat.
Oh, my God.
Trigger warning, violence against children. He then stabbed their 2.5-year-old Betty Jean Bartlett and beat her to death with the butt of a gun. Her tiny body was put in a cardboard box and placed on top of the toilet seat in the outhouse.
Oh, my God.
Velda's body was wrapped in a blanket and shoved in the toilet. Marion's body was found in the chicken coop. Charles and Carol stayed in the house for 6 days while they tried to figure out their next move. They forged a note and put it on the front door, which read, quote, "Stay away. Everybody is sick with the flu." And it was signed Miss Bartlett. With Miss Bartlett underlined twice. So Carol tried to say that she underlined it because her mother called herself Mrs. Bartlett. So she was trying to, in her way, she's saying, oh, I was saying that this was like a call for help from my little sister because it's Miss Bartlett.
The two-year-old?
Right, because Miss Bartlett would have been the two-year-old, and Mrs. Bartlett would have been...
But the two-year-old would write that? Wait, what is her plan?
Right, exactly.
I don't know, she's 13. She's a child,
oh, true.
Right?
She's also a child.
Well, here's
she's
the thing. So
stupid.
Carol's
frontal lobe is not fully
developed. Carol would later say she wasn't even home when the murders occurred.
I was going to ask
she,
if
yeah,
she was
she had
there,
no
yeah.
idea. She was. But she's
she
saying,
was
like...
She was actually there.
But she, like, didn't see it, and maybe he hid the bodies. She's like, no, I wasn't home. I didn't know. But Charles told a very different story that included her being the one to beat her 2.5-year-old sister to death. All three bodies were discovered the following Monday, and it was all over the news. Eventually, Carol's grandmother became suspicious when she wasn't allowed into the house, and she called the police. By the time authorities got there, though, Charles and Carol were gone. Charles took Carol to the house of a family friend, August Meyer. He was a 70-year-old man who would sometimes go hunting with Charlie's father. According to Charles, August answered the door and immediately pointed a gun in their face. Like, August pointed the gun at his face. August was known to be a very sweet man, and he knew Charles well, so it's very unlikely that he would greet him this way. The awful truth is that he probably welcomed them into his home and tried to help him, but Charles shot him in the back of the head and stuck his body in the wash house out back. Charles also, here comes trigger warning, just shoot ahead 2 seconds, shot August's dog. It's important for you to fully understand what kind of person he is. Otherwise, I wouldn't even, like, say it, but...
Oh, no, sure. I understand. I just... Yeah. Like, but why? It's a dog.
No reason.
Like, there's
no reason.
No reason.
They try to flee, but their car gets stuck in the mud. This is when 17-year-old Robert Jensen and his 16-year-old girlfriend Carol King notice the car and pull over to help.
They offer to pull them out and even give them a ride, you know, wherever they want to go. But instead, Charles shoots Robert 6 times in the head, and then he tries to rape Carol King, but one source I read says he was unsuccessful. Regardless, he shoots Carol King, and then stabs her repeatedly in her sexual organs.
Oh my God.
He then took their bodies back to August's house and threw them in the storm cellar. They were found when the police eventually came looking for August. The couple stole Robert's car and started driving west towards Washington State, where Charles's brother lived. But they only made it about 3 hours before turning around and heading back to Lincoln. They approached the house of a wealthy industrialist named C. Lauer Ward. Charles first stabbed their maid, Lillian Fenkel, and then the family dog. Once Lauer's wife, Clara, came home, Charles attacked her with a knife, stabbing her to death. Then he waited for Lauer, who he fatally shot. The killer couple robbed the Lauer home and then fled in the family's Packard. Those are like the old school cars. Mm. They tried heading back to Washington State again and made it to Douglas, Wyoming before Charles said the car was getting too hot and they needed to find a new ride.
Oh, like, was... I'm so sorry if this is
Yeah. So I listened to this other, because, like, sometimes I'll just listen to a bunch of other podcasts about it while I'm doing stuff. And they were like, oh, your ride was too warm for you. I'm so sorry. And I was like, guys, he means, like, it, like, the fuzz is going to get it. Wait, you wouldn't understand that either. He means, like, people can see it and they notice it.
It's stolen.
They were little.
They were little.
That's when they saw what looked like an empty car on the side of the road.
Oh, I don't like how you said that.
However,
inside
was 37-year-old shoe salesman Merle Collision, who was just trying to take a quick nap.
That is so scary, because, like, I'll have, when I, like, drive back and forth in California a lot, sometimes I'm really tired, and I'm always terrified to pull over and just sleep because of this, mm-hmm. which has never happened to me, thankfully, knock on wood. But, like, I'm too scared to even try, because, like, that is just a fear that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, go on.
Charles tries to force Merle out of the car, and when he doesn't budge, Charles shoots him. He tries to reach in and release the e-brake so he can take the car, but it gets stuck. So Charles is struggling with it, and a passerby, Joe Sprinkle, or Joe Sprinkle, depending on the source, that's just fun to say, sees what he thinks is a young couple having car trouble. He approaches, and Charles tells him he needs a hand, releasing the e-brake. When Joe reaches inside the car, he sees the body of Merle crumbled up under the dash. Charles pulls his gun, and the two struggle for a bit. It's in that exact moment that Sheriff William Romer happens to drive by and see the two men fighting. He pulls over as a frantic Carol approaches him, screaming, "He's going to kill me! He just killed a man!" Charles hops in the car and drives off towards Douglas, Wyoming, leaving Carol in the dust. Romer stays with Carol and calls in for backup. Douglas Police Chief Bob Ainsley and Converse County Sheriff Earl Heflin set up a roadblock near city limits. Charles blows through it, and the police give chase, getting up to speeds of 100 miles an hour. At some point, shots are fired through the back window of Charles's car. Shards of broken glass rip through the car, grazing his ear and his right hand. Mm. According to the responding officers, basically Charles was being a dramatic baby about his injury. He stopped the car and surrendered because he was like, "Oh my God, I'm bleeding out." He didn't even get shot. It was literally like shards of glass cut him.
Dear.
He was fine.
Oh, dear.
Charles, of course, would later boast, quote, "They would never have caught me if I hadn't stopped." Sure, bro.
Okay.
Well, you did and you got caught.
Yeah.
So. Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
The so next.
Those people would have lived if you didn't decide to kill them.
Yes.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. Also that.
You can talk about all sorts of things like that, Charles. Yeah.
The next day, Charles appeared in court and was charged with the murder of Merle Collision. Nicole, maybe you should take a nice soothing sip, because the rest of this is going to make you big mad. Big mad.
Bad feeling.
I want to give a shout out
to Magnum Coffee.
Magnum Coffee.
They're a coffeery in here. A coffeetery.
Coffeetery.
A coffeetery in Vegas. And I think it's at least where they roast their beans. But they're a company in town, and they're really cool, and they're really nice, and they have delicious coffee. They're kind of over by the airport, if you're a Vegas person.
Like Sunset and not quite Eastern.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's really cool. They do coffee stuff there. They also donated a gourmet coffee basket for the Playhouse. So thank you, Magnum Coffee. Also, you have delicious coffee.
Thank you.
For being
delicious coffee.
Oh, love that.
Development Hell is back, guys.
Development Hell is the podcast that Richard Humphreys and Kyle Anderson has with another gentleman that's, I'm sure, very lovely as well. I'm very sorry that I don't know your name. But I love that podcast. They do, like, a stupid, awesome deep dive about, like, a movie that took forever to get made. They just did the Speed Racer, like, and it's so good. And they just, like, they're funny. Their anchor ad is my favorite one. And because they tell the truth about how we make millions of dollars off of Anchor. they're not afraid to tell the truth. And they're just funny boys, and I love it. And I'm somebody that likes to learn a ton of shit about stupid things. They did a whole thing about Godzilla, and it's so great. And King Kong, like, it's so great. So I highly recommend it if you want to learn about movies and projects and video games and stuff like that that just took forever.
Yeah.
Fun.
Nice.
Awesome.
That's really awesome.
How much did they pay you for that ad?
Not enough.
No, just kidding. They paid me nothing. They paid me in friendship because I love them.
Ah,
friendship.
Gross. I love it.
Friendship.
Okay, so he had gone over state lines to Wyoming, right?
Oh, no.
So they were going to charge him.
Oh, no.
They were going to charge him in Wyoming. However, the governor at the time had recently come out saying they were incredibly against the death penalty. So they were like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to have him sent back to Nebraska because we want him to fry. So on January 31st, 1958, Charles was sent back to Nebraska to await trial, which began in May of the same year. His lawyers tried the insanity plea, even though Charles didn't want to go that route. Their attempts to prove that he was just a child who was not in his right mind were futile. Charles Starkweather was sentenced to death on May 23, 1958, and was executed by electrocution on June 25, 1959. So he would have been 21? Mm. Nope, he wasn't even 21 yet. He was 20, because he was born in November. Mm. He would be the last person executed in the state of Nebraska until 1994.
Do you know why?
No.
Okay.
I could have gone that far.
That's okay. You know, that's okay. That's what I do. You need to do that.
And what about little Carol Fugate? Even though she alerted police, she was taken into custody and locked away in the Douglas County Jail. It's said that she came in an absolute state of shock and eventually just got super nervous and upset. The first morning she awoke in her cell, she started crying out for her mother and seemed not to understand why she couldn't see her. She was reminded that they were killed and started to genuinely break down. Sheriff Heflin told reporters, quote, "I don't think she knew that her folks were killed." However, Sheriff Romer, who remember Carol had gone like running up to from the car at the last scene, testified that when she ran up to him that day, she admitted to him that she saw her family killed and included details that only a person there would have known. Mm-hmm. In addition, in her pockets were newspaper clippings about the murder. Charles did try his best to say that Carol was a captive at first. He quickly turned on her, saying she was actually the one to blame for several of the killings. Eventually, Carol was convicted and sentenced to life in prison, but she ended up serving 18 years and was paroled in 1976. She would go on to change her name, get married, and raise a family. She still insists that she was just as much of a victim as the others. And let's not forget the names of those that lost their lives in this spree of terror. Robert Colbert, Marion Bartlett, Velda Bartlett, Betty Jean Bartlett, August Meyer, Robert Jensen, Carol King, C. Lauer Ward, Clara Ward, Lillian Fenkel, and Merle Collision. And since it's season 3, we got to keep things spicy. I'm going to pose a question to end out this case.
Ooh.
Carol Fugate, willing participant or victim? What are your final sips?
So I think that she's too young to truly be an actual willing participant with full understanding of what she was doing. I think that it's a complicated question because of her age and where she is developmental-wise, right? Because there's only so much that her brain is actually fully developed for her to truly understand the consequences of, but also enough to know right and wrong. So I think that she was a participant but didn't truly fully grasp the consequences of her actions, because it's like, I was actually just talking about similar things, a case that I'm writing that is to come soon. When you're a child and you decide to kill a bug And you're like, ooh, I'm going to kill some bugs and see what that does. Oh, some people even like to take magnifying glasses and fry little ants. And, like, they may do this for a while and not fully understand that, like, that is a living thing that you are actually killing. Like, they know I am killing this thing, but they don't fully grasp what that actually means until they're older. So I think that it's both. I think that she's a victim in some ways, and she is a participant, but she isn't old enough to, like, truly understand the gravity of the situation, is my opinion.
Yeah, there's this interesting case. I'm trying to find it.
Take your time.
Take your time. And she was 14 at the time of her arrest?
Yeah, because she met him when she was 13.
So her only serving 18 years of her life sentence doesn't surprise me because she's a minor, right? So mm-hmm. rules are different when you're a minor. And most of the time, when you're a minor and mm-hmm. you get out, there is, you automatically get a name change. Like, you get a whole, there's like a whole thing that happens usually with children.
Ah, okay. Because okay.
that's actually one of the cases that I'm writing is very similar in that aspect where the children do get new identities. It's just part of the deal because they were too young to truly, like, they're not considered adults yet. So, like, to help mask their rest of their lives, they are given new names and identities to allow them to have.
Oh, okay. I saw a thing recently of these five teenagers that killed a sixth friend. Stop me if this is the one that you're talking about.
It's not.
Okay, so Seth Jackson was this kid that was lured to a friend's house and murdered by five friends. Four friends. I was right. It was five because there's the one guy. And so there's this really interesting, there's a channel on YouTube called Explore With Us, and it's kind of like Jim Can't Swim, if you guys watch those, where it will go through the interrogation video. And so it's these teenagers that are, the oldest one is 18. So they're all 15, 16, all that kind of stuff. They lured the guy to the house. It was a girl's ex-boyfriend. She texted him and said, come over. And then they killed him. Killed him good. And they, the point that I'm bringing up is in the interrogation video, you listen to these 15, 16-year-olds say, everyone's going to hate us when they find out that we did this. And my boyfriend's not going to wait 5 years for mm-hmm. me for this crime, not realizing that, no, you killed a person. You're mm-hmm. going away forever.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Where, like, all the little things are literally them going, like, my boyfriend's not going to stick around, and everyone's going to be so mad at us, and I don't know if I can wait 5 years. I can't believe I'm going to be 20 in 5 years. That's crazy. I can't believe that. And it's like, no, you're going away for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's that kind of thing where I totally agree. Like, yeah, she absolutely 100% wanted to do all of that. Mm-hmm. I don't think she realized what all that meant, though.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think Carol 100%, or Carol?
Yeah.
I feel like 100% she was like, yeah, I have a older boyfriend, and mm-hmm. it's the 50s, and blah, 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 and this is amazing, and woo, 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 not realizing that, like, no, this is real, and you really did,
right.
like, yeah. But mm-hmm. but how will she know? She's 13. You've gone through anything at that mm-hmm. point.
Right.
Like, so how would you know?
Mm-hmm. And with the thing of, like, I wasn't home. I didn't know my family was dead. I really think part of it was that I don't think she knew it was going to happen. I highly doubt that this was a, hey, I want you to kill my family so we can be together. I think he blew off the handle. I think someone spoke down to him and he wasn't going to have it. And he killed them. And then she, I think it's trauma. Ooh. Either is blocking it out.
Could totally be.
Or whatever. I don't know. I really doubt she was a willing, like, I doubt that she actually hurt her baby sister. Is what I'm saying.
But she also totally could have and
she
just
totally
not understand how, what that really means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I remember being a kid growing up and, like, people did really stupid things and hurt people and, like,
yeah.
didn't really comprehend what they were doing.
Yeah.
You know, kids are mean.
Kids yeah. are mean and because they just don't get it. They mm-hmm. don't really see the impact of their involvement in something until it happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, depending on, you know, what the intervention after the fact, they'll either go, well, this happened to me, so it needs to happen to you now, or, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm mad that this happened to me, so now I'm doing it to other people.
Right.
My thing is, yeah, he was already gonna, he had made the choice when he was scoping the place out, you know, like when he grabbed the gun and mm-hmm. he was scoping that initial, like, market out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was one of those, because it's interesting where it's like he's already done the deed. It's not, it's, you either go one way or the other. I find, at least in these cases where you guys telling me, is either they do the one and it's like done for a long time or whatever, or they do the one and then they just keep going with that mm-hmm. same trend because they're like, well, I already got this far. Mm-hmm. So right. why wouldn't I just kill the dog? Like, why wouldn't I just do that? Like, why wouldn't I just remove everything because no consequences have happened yet?
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't you? Because it's a bad thing to do. And if you've already crossed that threshold, then what's... It's kind of like how that idea of good and bad is subjective. We all just kind of agree upon what is morally right and wrong. Like, we've all agreed upon these rules and we live by them because if you don't, it's chaos, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're, like, throwing one of those out the window, you've already hit that rock bottom and you're, like, you're already at the bottom of the well. So yes. you're, like, I'm just going to keep digging.
And to add on to that, there's a Latin term for it, but it's a shared madness between two people.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's, like, yeah, where you say, like, oh, well, this guy is saying that what I'm doing is okay and mm-hmm. I'm saying what he's doing is okay and we are validating each other and everything is fine and these other people are all wrong and we are right because Charles says mm-hmm. it's right or because Carol says it's right and yeah. we don't care what these other people say.
Yeah,
so that's like what they were experiencing.
Like the San Francisco witch killers we talked about in
right.
season one.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just, I agree with what you're saying, Nicole, where like she totally wanted to do all that. I don't think she really fully understood what that meant, though.
Yeah.
Because right. at least in my experience with younger teenagers, it's coming out of the phase of I'm so angry I'm just gonna hit you, and then like uh-huh. of like childhood, you know, stuff where you're, because their brain's not fully developed.
Yeah, that there's a memory that I have. My younger brother and I used to like get into physical fights a lot. Mm-hmm. But nothing ever serious happened. We'd just get mad at each other and then we'd like rustle around. You know, we were real close in age. But there was one time that the way he fell when we were fighting, he hit his head on the corner of like a vent and he started bleeding. Mm-hmm. And it was that moment that I realized, oh, this is a lot more serious than we thought it was. Because mm-hmm. now you could actually be really hurt. And it took like a minute for me to register because of my age. I was pretty young. And then I freaked out and started crying. And like my dad obviously came and like helped everything and he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But like it was... that moment we'd been fighting, we'd bruised each other, like we'd done stuff in the past, like it wasn't the first fight we'd ever gotten into, but it was the moment where he bled, like there was blood, where I was like, oh wait a minute, we could kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you just don't understand, you're too young.
Yeah, you're too young, your brain's developing. Yeah. you haven't seen enough and a lot of things, so how do you know if you haven't seen it before?
Yeah. Yeah. And if your brain literally, like, it's not firing those cylinders yet. Like, it literally isn't yet. There's still so much your brain hasn't developed.
Overstimulus of hormones, like, yeah. just way too many.
Yeah. Right? Especially with an older person. My other final tip is leave kids alone. Don't talk to kids. Don't, if you're older, like, just don't, like, leave them alone. Don't go anywhere near them. Just be a cool adult. There's all sorts of things, people that, like famous people, one of our favorite, oh, I'm just gonna bring it up because one of my favorite true crime things right now is still in the works, and it's the Chris D'Elia stuff that's coming out.
Oy, oy, oy.
About how he's just been texting people over and over and all this kind of stuff, and like there's all these really great documentaries and things now, one made by Kyle Anderson. I think it says the problem with Chris D'Elia or the issue with Chris D'Elia, but if you look up Kyle Anderson, there's this really great hour-long documentary that literally brings on people that like with full-on audio recordings of stuff that he's done, that like he just takes, it's people, older people taking advantage of young folks that just want to be liked and want to mm-hmm. be cool,
mm-hmm.
and they go on their tours and they just pick up people along the way. I know that's like a whole thing that musicians like have been known to do, where you know you hear all about old stories of them coming through on this thing and they have all these people come into their dressing rooms and then they just leave them in the dust, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just like younger people are so stupid and malleable and trusting and just want to be liked. So anyone that takes advantage of that is a person that I don't want to drink a cup of coffee with.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. No, not
so,
at all.
Like, call out your friends, tell your friends stop being fucking weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, keep, like collect your own. Like, keep your peers, like, we all gotta be looking out for each other. Because it's so unfortunate that something like this turned out to be, especially with people that wanted to help them, like, help them on the side of the road yeah. and stuff. That's the, mm-hmm. that's...
People who are on, wanted to help them or minding their own business.
Minding their mm-hmm. own business. Like, keep your damage to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Stop taking it on other people.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm glad that it happened long enough ago that these people are gone now. But it's unfortunate that this isn't the only time I've ever heard of this kind of case, though, of, like, teenagers doing stupid, making stupid choices like this for other people because they either can't be together or just something gets in the way.
Yeah, there's another case where a girl pretends to be locked, like, the... Like, people came in and robbed her house and killed her parents, but she was just tied up.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, like, her boyfriend and a friend that came in and did it.
The
spoilies, we won't do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's
horrible.
It is horrible. And so I think at the very end of the day, if we have any youths and teenagers and people that are under the age of 25 as far as brain development goes, with, like, being a youth is... don't sweat the small stuff, and all things pass. Mm-hmm. So even in moments where it's like, they won't let me be with this person, I don't know, 9 times out of 10, anyone that I was dating at that age, I'm not even around anymore.
No.
Like, just be, you know, from experience, like, I guess that's the best advice I can give is nobody is worth that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no other human being that you are associated with that's ever going to be worth doing any of that kind of stuff with.
No
one's worth murdering over.
No. Being a youth, as we're saying in this conversation, is amazing. Please, like, explore. Your brain can absorb so many incredible things right now, like play instruments, learn languages, read books, go on fun, silly adventures with your friends. Like, do fun youth stuff.
Don't throw it away.
Yeah,
don't murder your parents.
Please don't.
They really are trying to help you, and you will realize that many years down the line. You're going to be like, oh, they were looking out for me. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if there's crazy things going on, there are always other options.
Yeah.
And please seek out help. And if you don't know where to look, there are so many resources. We have a lot of resources that are just on our pages that can lead you to other places if you need to seek out other help.
Yeah.
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 Thanks, Amanda, for bringing that.
Thanks, Carly.
Hot episode.
This episode's too hot. We gotta
too
go.
Hot. It's too hot.
Cheese it. It's the fuzz.
It's the fuzz. Quick, get the coffee. Thank you, Beans, for joining us on another wild ride. We will be back again next week with another episode here on
Morning Murders.
Thank you for listening to Morning Murders.
Keep checking our page for new episodes and special guests.
Want to learn more? Swing by our Instagram to check out more information from our episodes at Morning Murders. That's MourningMurders.
Also, you can always check out some mental health links and our episodes resources in our show notes.
If you enjoyed listening to our highly caffeinated conversation, please leave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends.
If you have any stories you'd like to hear discussed around the Breakfast Nook, email us at morningmurders@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening!
Ben, do you have a story for us?
No.
The boss.
She's such a good boy.
Yes, he's like,
he did a good boy.
Whenever you want, Mom.
I am here for it.
Just put that wherever you want.
You can put that wherever
you want it.
Harder.
And so do your sinuses.
You told me to go.
Woo!
Sorry.
You'll hear that. You'll see that. You can just see that. Yeah, just, all right.
Douglas Palief, cheese.
Cheese.
The police cheese.
Oh, police not cheese. The police cheese.
Douglas police
Hope cheese. There's no fuzz on it, because that'd be mold.
I'm on diner. I'm dinery.
Diet.
Dairy. I'm non-dairy. Dairy-ary. Nope. I'm non-dairy.
That's it. Non-dairy-ary.
Non-dairy-ary.
Oh, my God. All right. Beep, beep. Douglas Palief. I can't say it. Palief Chief. I can't say it. Douglas Police Chief Bob Ainsley and Converse The last one was fine. Okay.
Now you have to do it again.
It was fine. Like, I wasn't super happy with it. It was fine. And
nope,
now I can't do it at all.
It again.
Zah.